Okay, we are in the company of historian Dr. Joe Kelly. Right, so talk to us then about the boat on which they left. We did see a recreation of it, I think, in 1607. I do recall it paddling off from Rathmullen, not where it went to, I can't quite remember. But it must have been a big vessel. Did these noble people, did they man it themselves? Was there a crew? Give us a little bit of an idea about that, Joe, if you don't mind.
Well, you'd ask the question, you know, why did they leave? And it would appear that they'd been planning this. Now, why they left, maybe they were, the plan was to come back again, maybe to go to Spain and petition the King of Spain to send another army. One doesn't know. But we do know that Hugh O'Neill and Maguire and O'Donnell had previously sent for help for a ship to come. And what that was about, we're not sure. Was it to come and collect them and take them away? Because it looked at this time that Hugh O'Neill was going to go to London to see the king. So how all of a sudden did this change in the space of a few weeks? And when this ship arrived at the beginning of September 1607 into Donegal, word was sent to O'Donnell, Maguire of Fermanagh, and Hugh O'Neill was in Slane at the time, meeting Chichester, who was the Lord Deputy for England, talking about the meeting that would be had with the king and getting ready for that. And the word got to him in Slane that this boat was here. And Hugh O'Donnell left Slane and travelled back at night, heading through Dungannon, heading into Ballindrate. His sister-in-law was married there, then went across the Foyle in the water and landed into Rathmullen. Mm. And one wonders, you know, why, what, was it a panic that he had to go that quick? I don't think so. And historians would argue that he knew exactly what he was doing and he realised that he had to go on this boat. The fact that he travelled at night, he realised that there were spies everywhere watching him. So I talked about the different people that were on it. I mean, the noblest of people were on it, and there's a list of different people. There were various, the Lord of Fermanagh, Cúchonaid Maguire was on it, Rory O'Donnell, who was the leader of Donegal at that time, was on it. Hugh O'Neill himself was on it. Their children were on it. There was 5 O'Hagans, 2 Kennys, 2 O'Mahonys. There were 14 priests.
But how did the general public see this, though? Because, I mean, you talked about the times leading up to this, and these are the people, you know, these are the cornerstones of any society, it sounds like, you know, the brains, the leaders, the church. You know, and you're standing in Rathmullen waving them off. Now, we're not 100% sure then of the motivation for their departure, but I just wonder how it might have been seen by the rank and file population.
See, the rank and file population didn't understand. Mm. And I don't even think the earls themselves that left understood what would this would precipitate. Yep. Subsequently. It's history repeats itself. Look at what's happening in Palestine and Israel. Did the Hamas realise what they would do would precipitate and what's happened? History oftentimes is easy to look back retrospectively. Yep. But at the time, I think the ordinary person didn't understand. And so when the boat arrived into Rathmullen,
Okay, our link is frozen there. We'll see if it returns with Dr. Joe Kelly. Because there are so many questions that remain unanswered, but there seems to be a connection issue there. I'll try and bring Joe back in here just to see if we can just to wrap up that conversation, because we do. He's got a lot to do this morning, as do we. That's failed. You know, we might have to return to that another time. If you've anything you want to say, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, give us a call on 074 91 25,000. And by the way, you can send your voice notes as this listener did, as it relates to parking. Have a listen to this.
I was in Don Stores a couple of weeks ago in Letterkenny with my mum, who's in a wheelchair. Couldn't get disabled parking. They were all taken up by people with no discs in. I went into Dunn's and asked who was looking after the car park, and I was told that it was a private owned company and they were located upstairs beside Paco. I went up, I went across the car park upstairs, could not find anybody to come in, couldn't find anybody to speak to about this, had to park in a normal car park and had trouble, like the lady before, had to pull forward, couldn't get my mum out in the wheelchair, too tight, but nobody is supervising the disabled car parks in Dunn's, and it's an ongoing thing. It hasn't been the first time that it happened to me. So I just think it needs to be a lot more supervised.
Yeah, indeed. It is, I think, a little bit complicated in private car parks. But anyway, that's one listener's view there. Send your voice notes on that issue or any issue to 086 60 25 1000 on WhatsApp. You open up a message to Highland Radio, 086 60 25 1000, as I mentioned, and you hold down the little microphone. Have your say, lift off your finger, and it's sent. Okay, back with more after these. We are joined on the programme now for our item, a regular item here in the programme. Don't know what it's called. Dear Greg, Caroline calls it, but I'm starting to embrace it anyway. Keely Taverna is a psychotherapist, author and coach, and joins us back on the show. Keely, how are you getting on? Good morning to you.
Easy, Greg. Not too bad. How are you?
Same, living same. Yeah, that's it. Dragging the devil by the tail. Let me ask you, what is... Keely, are you there?
Absolutely, I'm here. I'm back again.
I thought you tripped over. There's something going on, particularly with matters of the heart, isn't it? Because a lot of us are sensible people, and you know, we think we've got a good grasp of life, and we can operate well in a work environment, and we can parent, and we can be really responsible and deal with life challenges. And then, you know, something romantically props up or isn't working for us, and we unravel. What's going on there?
Well, we place a great emphasis on our intimate relationships. We want our intimate relationships to complete us and to totally fulfill us. And that is not healthy, and that's not wise. And that's one of the reasons why we've also been Disneyfied. We also hope that, you know, the man on the noble steed will come and save our lives. And often when that doesn't happen, it can be very difficult for people because they've often pinned their hopes on intimate relationships completing them and fulfilling them.
So is do too many of us then seek perfection when really perfection in any element of life doesn't really fit, and we're becoming less tolerant and too quick to move on or whatever it might be? Is there an issue there that you know, when you mentioned Disneyfied, that's what sort of made me go to that question, that we just seek perfection?
I think we seek completion.
Completion, right.
That by having the right person and then going through the stages, you know, kids, house, like that will fulfill us. There's an emphasis on a partner to complete and make us happy. And as such, we don't take responsibility for our own happiness, pursuing the passions of our heart. And we assume, you know, it's a bit like people say, oh, when are you going to settle down? As if to say people in relationships embody the art of perfection and wholeness. Mm. That's not necessarily true. And so remember, from an attachment perspective, and this is something that I get all my couples to do, is to do a questionnaire to look at their attachment styles so that they're clear about, well, if I'm, you know, secure and my partner's avoidant, this is also shows up in terms of the dynamics between us. Look, mummy and daddy issues show up, and we may put disproportionate responsibility on somebody else to fulfill our dreams, to keep us safe. And as such, when they fall short, as we all do, that becomes cataclysmic for people.
All right. So if that is the case, then if maybe you haven't been in a relationship before, or you're between relationships, if you don't feel you have your own ducks in a row emotionally, like you have some level of contentment, sort of an emotional independence, should you stave off maybe getting into a serious relationship? Now, obviously, we don't plan these things from time to time, but is that where you need to sort of work on yourself to get yourself to a certain level of emotional contentment before getting into a serious relationship, hoping the next person will plug the gaps?
Absolutely. But for some people, it's intolerable for them to be with themselves. Mm. Some people don't like themselves. So the notion of being alone without anybody is quite cataclysmic for them. So they have to distract themselves and will quickly get into another relationship and another relationship in order to circumnavigate doing the inner work, which is not, you know, I'm not here to say it's easy or skippity. Like, it can be tough, but you avoid it at your peril because it will show up again, especially if you end up in abusive relationships. If you end up giving your all and you constantly end up in these one-way dynamics, whether it's financial.
But why do people do that repeatedly, Keely? You often hear, you know, people talk about, I go for a type and it's a bad boy type, or I don't know what the female opposite to that is, you know, and maybe the good guy or the good woman doesn't excite them. Is that's obviously a personal deficiency there that's not being fixed by going for these people, is it?
Well, I would say that actually the ambition is to fix others.
Mm.
One of the ambitions, unconscious ambition, is to fix others.
Okay.
And if I love enough, do enough, go above and beyond enough, this person will see my value, they'll see my worth, and they'll love me and appreciate me. But all the while, they're kind of often functioning from their childhood wounds unconsciously and disproportionately given in relationships. And that then, compounded by a lack of self-worth, means that they may get to a point where when abuse kicks in, if their value is purely externally derived from somebody else, then that can also begin to, and if they think that by being nice to someone and keep giving, that that will surely give them what they're looking for, they get in a really sticky situation, whether it's taking out finance, credit cards, mortgages, business, signing for, like, it can get, you know, really sticky because we're looking for something that we've never had.
All right, let's get some questions, if that's all right. I dated a guy for 9 months. He was a narcissist, but I ignored all the red flags. We eventually ended, and 2 weeks later, he started dating. One second now, there's the red flags, because we do know Keely has a particular thing for narcissism. We eventually ended, and 2 weeks later he started dating and is now in a relationship doing all the same things I asked him to do, and I'm finding it difficult to move on. So he was a, you know, nasty piece of work with this person. Now he's Prince Charming with the next person, and the first person struggling to move on, and they want help.
Well, firstly, I'd be keen to understand, how does she know what he's up to? Are you following on socials? Are you looking at WhatsApp status updates? Are you looking at WhatsApp pictures? Because sometimes you're not being kind to yourself. You're actually re-traumatizing yourself. So we need a phone audit to work out where you're following.
How are you accessing that info? Why are you punishing yourself if it's by choice?
There you go. And sometimes we don't want to take responsibility for that. If you've got friends who leak or are always telling you, oh, he's off with Barbara now, then maybe actually, you know what, that relationship's been difficult, Barbara, it's not helpful to me. So there's a certain amount of taking responsibility you need to take for yourself. Additionally, when narcissistic individuals go on to the next person, they'll be under a whole process of seduction. And that is a wonderful place to be. That the individual who's been jilted would have experienced that. That's when you think you found the love of your life. So, you know, whilst that can be uncomfortable, firstly, it's a part of the seduction process. And in due course, they would highly likely to experience what you've experienced. So often when I think about my exes who's gone on to others, I know they're more like, we have the same traits. They'll often be empathic, probably have self-esteem issues, overgive, don't advocate for themselves. And so they go for a particular type. And so once that seduction process is over and they're hooked in, that's when it usually begins to...
And it's clear that the person who messaged us is harping back to the good parts. They were with them with night for, they were with this guy for 9 months. He was a narcissist. There were red flags all over the place, but something is still, you know, resonating with them in their chest. So presumably they've filtered out all the crap and all the nonsense, and there's some emotion of positive experiences and all the good stuff he's probably doing for Barbara that they're holding on to.
Well, absolutely. But you also have to understand that seduction process is pretty intense. And like I said, if you're following them on socials, they you know have a tendency to deliberately post, knowing it gets under your skin. The key really is you need to understand what he tapped to inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, they can put us up and they can bring us down. And usually that can be our daddy issues. If we've got unresolved daddy issues, if you didn't feel valued or appreciated, you know, there's links back. So you get curious, what was the hook? Mine made me feel really special. He made me feel really important. And that wasn't normal in my life. I've often been overlooked. So I had to get curious. That's the gift of dating a narcissist. The gift of dating a narcissist is what you can take from it.
And what they can exploit, because you're a gift to the narcissist, because they see those character traits that they can exploit to their ends. Right. 16 years ago, I met a great girl. We've got two children. She's a brilliant mother and homemaker, but I just don't fancy or love her anymore. I don't want to break up our family home, but I find myself scrolling under a false name on Tinder. I think she feels the same. But neither of us are brave enough to say it out loud. Help.
These are the times for the difficult conversations about where the relationship has got to. Not always easy, but often if you don't have the conversation, I don't know what will happen. They pick up your phone one day and then they'll see that you're Alfie. Anyhow, let's think of a name for Alfie online in his online persona. Yeah. So that you can avoid it. It's a difficult conversation to have. And I think it's worthy of one where, as ever, you go and see potentially a couples therapist to begin to talk about, you know, the dynamics. It feels like it's become lackluster. You know, who knows? You may want to have it. You may want to try. You may not even be having all these important signs. If you're having intimacy, sex, if that's all come off the agenda and it's just 9 to 5, you will end up drifting. And it sounds like if you're both there, it's noteworthy of a conversation.
They're only deferring it, aren't they? Because that could end up being, sounds to me like a very, very messy breakup. Whereas a conversation, who's to say where it might lead? It might lead to a resolution of the situation in a positive way either. And that could be staying together or splitting up, but putting it off and sneaking behind the back on Tinder, that's only going to end up, it's coming down the line, a messy one, you know.
It's going to get, who wants to hear that? Or like somebody heard or saw you out with Gillian and like if the fact that they've called in means that they're curious, it's not a comfortable conversation to have. But I would suggest, you know, people come to me for as couples, not always to work on being a couple, but sometimes it's to end a relationship. Sometimes it is to have a difficult conversation with someone. So couples therapy isn't always about 20 sessions, let's stick together.
Mm.
It can be about saying, you know, our relationships hit the buffers. I'm not feeling fulfilled and I'm tempted to start going online and I wouldn't want to do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be brave and, you know, have a difficult conversation. I want to use this space for a difficult conversation.
Mm.
Can be a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, but there could be the situation too that someone wants to eat their cake and still have it, in that there's plenty in there, the house, you know, the access to the children, you know, maybe nice cars because there's two incomes or what have you. And is it that they don't run it, really give up and pursue other things? You know what I mean? You'd have to really dig down deep and find out, well, what's keeping you there?
Well, but then the reality is, right, if you circumnavigate it and then it gets heard on the grapevine that you're dating XYZ, it gets messy. Look, running two homes is expensive. And sometimes, look, couples nowadays, they do stay together for financial reasons. They're not together, separate lives, but they're staying. Like, there are ways to work through, but, you know, and it depends on your learning. Like, are you proactive or reactive?
Yeah, it's unfortunate anyway that they seem to be coming to the end of something.
It happens. Relationships, you know, can just hit the buffers.
Or
and it becomes
they can be saved as well. And that's what people obviously, as we're doing it now, Keely's located in England, but you can access her services remotely like we are doing right now. And I think a lot of people might see the benefit of having a third party in that conversation. Keely Taverna is a psychotherapist, author and coach. And we can reach how, Keely?
You can find me at www.keyforchange.com. I also
lovely
the W
stuff. I know it's like it's 2009 or something.
Like it's the 90s.
What's going on? The Google doesn't even have an address bar anymore. The search bar, the address bar, all the one thing.
You know why? Because I see it when I say it. I see it in my head rather than just say keyforchange.com.
That's how I remember people's names too. I paint little pictures for myself. All right, Keely. Thank you, Keely Taverna there. And really pleased to welcome back onto the programme, Phil Coulter. Good morning, Phil. Thank you so much for joining us. We're speaking to Phil Coulter as he embarks on his 4 Score and Then. It's a 23-date nationwide tour, and it's coming to On Green on Theatre in Letterkenny. Phil, how excited are you about this tour?
Well, I always look forward to, we do these national tours every autumn. Well, I think they keep adding to them, Greg. I think the last count was like 39 and something like that.
Oh, wow.
We finish on New Year's Eve in Bantry. So I think like Santa Claus, Greg, I'm going to be sleeping for the first half of January.
Fantastic. Tell us about the show, Phil, and what the audience can look forward to. Phil, sorry.
Well, it's a kind of a retrospective, you know, it's called 4 Score and Then. So it's looking back on a career in music, which is, I think, at the last count was like 56, 57 years. So in terms of the show, it's the song. Some of the songs which kind of choose themselves, Greg, as you would imagine. I mean, I couldn't do a show without singing the likes of The Town I Love So Well or Steal Away or The Old Man or indeed... currently, Ireland's Call seems to be the most favourite. So those kind of songs. Luckily, I have enough of those in my locker that we can do. Tell the stories behind the songs. It's a kind of relaxed evening where I chat a lot about the career, about the characters that I've encountered. Everybody from Sinead O'Connor to Luke O'Kelly to the Dubliners to God knows who. And we have unearthed some great archive footage. So, for example, so we have a big screen behind the piano. And we have, for example, archive of Luke Kelly talking about the first time he heard Scornati's Simplicity. We have archive of Billy Connolly talking of our various adventures. Sinead O'Connor. We have some excellent vintage archive, which just kind of helps to set the songs in some kind of context.
It also creates a wonderful experience that goes far beyond the music and gives it context. And you actually have the person behind it with that lived experience playing it, talking about it. I mean, it really is a remarkable opportunity for people. And the challenge is what to include, Phil, such as the back catalogue, you know, and the amount of stories and achievements that you've had over your career, because you could probably do a 6-7 hour show and still not include everything.
You're 100% right, Greg. You're 100% right. I mean, afterwards, there's always a difficulty, you know, when you're putting a set together, what to leave in, what to leave out, what to put in that's fresh from the last time you played, we're Letterkenny next week. So I have to look and see, what did we play in Letterkenny last time we were there? And make sure we freshened it up with like different tracks, different stories, whatever. But then inevitably afterwards, when you're chatting to people that say, oh, you didn't play Puppet on a String, or you didn't play Congratulations, or you didn't play Elvis is My Boy, or you didn't do this, that, and the other. But you're 100% right. If I did them all, it would be a week-long residency in the Angrenan, you know?
Exactly. You'd be doing what you two are doing over in the dome in Las Vegas. And who's saying you probably...
Talking of which, I was very flattered when I saw the clip of Bono singing Ireland's Call as he was going on stage on the day we were playing the All Blacks. I thought, well, this is looking good. Maybe Bono's going to do an album of Phil Coulter songs after this.
That's what I was going to... It's funny you should mention that, because I was going to ask, as an artist, as a producer, as a creator... You know, you talk of Bono singing that song, but there's tens of thousands of people. And I remember at the time there was this controversy about adopting this new anthem for the 32-county rugby team. And now it is just, it's an integral part of it. How does that feel, Phil? I mean...
You can't quantify, Greg. That's a good question, because it's one which has been asked many times and people are curious. You know, listen, as a songwriter, you get various, if you're fortunate enough to get like records on the charts and hits, you've got different kind of highs. Get a number one on the charts, of course, that's a high. Get Elvis Presley to sing one of your songs, that's a high. Get one of the big orchestras to play one of your melodies, that's a high. But when you get, when a song passes into the kind of public domain, you know, when in the stadium at Lansdowne Road, you see a packed house singing Ireland's Call, or when from the Stade de France, when you hear Ireland's Call, that's an entirely different feeling. That's a nice sense that, I suppose it's a sense of legacy, Greg. You know, we feel that when I have fallen off the perch, they're still going to be singing this song. That's a good feeling. That's a good feeling. Mm. I got the same thing from, The Town I Love So Well was never a million-selling song. You know, it was never like number one on the charts. But there's a song which has embedded itself into the public awareness. So to hear that song again, we did a wonderful last year when I was given the freedom of the city in Derry, which meant a lot. Obviously, there are awards and then there are awards, you know, be they Grammy Awards or Gold Albums, whatever. But to get an award like that from your own people in your own place was a bit special. But the following day, we did this epic, epic sing-along where like 3,000 people turned up in Edmonton Square on a drizzly Saturday afternoon to sing The Town I Love So Well. Those kind of events, that kind of sense of having, you know, a song that has passed into people's awareness, song that is now part of the landscape. That's certainly is a much more heartwarming feeling.
It is, it's even beyond that, because it's intertwined with people's love of their parents, their family, your grandparents, their partner. It's forever intertwined with them, and I think that's just such an amazing achievement. And you talked of your legacy, which you continue to write right now. It's not just yours, because your legacy is intertwined with Sinead O'Connor, as you mentioned, with Elvis Presley, Elvis Costello, more contemporary artists such as Lisa Stansfield, Van Morrison. Do you know what I mean? Your name is amongst all of Sinead O'Connor. I think I mentioned, as you mentioned, I mean, you were nominated for an incredibly prestigious award for your work with Sinead, who we very sadly lost. And then you talk of Cliff Richard, Luke Kelly, Cilla Black, who's going viral on TikTok at the moment for surprise, surprise. Do you know what I mean? But your legacy is intertwined with all of these people's legacies. It's really just really a treat to even be able to speak to you, Phil. I hold you in such high regard.
Well, that's very kind of you, Greg. I've been very fortunate. You know, I have. But when I've been asked that question about, you know, my staying power, that I'm still doing it after all these years, that question was asked, how do you do that? I said, well, the simple answer is I turn up for work on Monday morning. Mm. You know, this is what I do. This is my job. It doesn't mean that I could walk on water. It doesn't mean that I'm entitled to anything. I mean, you know, because we sell out one tour like last year doesn't mean that I'm entitled to think that it's going to be sold out this tour. You know, that's one of a younger generation of aspiring performers and talents. That's something which kind of irritates me, that sense of entitlement. You know, talented people who believe that because they're talented, the world owes them a living is the greatest fallacy.
Yes,
buys you in the game. Hard work and the stickability that puts you in there.
Yes, but
what's my greater?
Sorry, Phil. The line's breaking up a little bit on us, Phil. You were going to talk about your greatest achievement. Quickly say that whilst we have the line.
Yeah, I was asked that in America just last month. My greatest, that's an easy one to answer. My greatest achievement in the music business is to be still in the music business after all these years.
Indeed. But you know, some of the greatest artists with the greatest longevity have that attitude that you have and spend an awful lot of time trying, like Daniel O'Donnell springs to mind, trying to tell younger artists, you know, that is the philosophy and that's what will work for you. Phil, listen, thank you so much for speaking with us. We really appreciate it. We're getting really early access in your tour on November 16th, which is next week, because the opening day is the Civic Centre. That being said, you've added so many dates, my list could be out of date. But I'm going to remind listeners as a bid farewell to you of when they can catch you here locally. Phil, thank you so very much for your time.
It's always a pleasure to chat on Highland Radio.
Take care, Phil Coulter. Thank you very much indeed. Phil is in On Green on Theatre Letterkenny on Thursday, the 16th of November at 23. I wonder if Caroline get me buy me a ticket for that. I think I'd go to that. I'd love to see that. Right, okay, shall we have a bit of Phil?
Steal away. Let's steal away. No reason left to stay. For me and you, let's start anew, and darling, steal away. Let's steal away and chase our dream and hope they never find us. The dream days, the empty nights, we leave them all behind us, and steal away, let's steal away, no reason left to stay, for me. Let's start anew, and darling, steal away.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at HighlandRadio.com. The 9 till noon show with Letterkenny Credit Union, now offering mortgages from 40,000 to 600,000 euro with no hidden fees or transaction charges. Letterkenny Credit Union, 9102127.
In studio with me now, we have two guests. Patsy Ferry of the Letterkenny Youth and Family Services. Good morning to you, Patsy.
Morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for calling in. And also Margaret McAteer, a teacher at Errigal College. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Greg. Thanks a million for having us in this morning.
No
Looking
problem,
forward to talking
Margaret.
With you.
You are. Well, you said I shouldn't speak to you first.
I did say that, so over to Patsy.
Okay. Thanks so much, both of you, talking in. We're talking ahead of the LYFS, Errigal College Parents Association fundraiser in aid of brain cancer research. It's a coffee morning, craft sale, pampering and wake up. There's raffle, there's gift bags, and it takes place on the 16th of November at 10:30 a.m. at the LYFS. And Patsy, this is something you would be keen to be involved with because of your life experience.
We have a knitting group, a craft group in Lives who meet every Thursday morning. And for the last 5-6 years, we've every year we've done a different charity. Last year we done 42 blankets and we donated them to the hospice and the Bumbleance. And we had a big launch and we went to Errigal College with them. So this year, when we were deciding what we would do, we decided to do a fundraiser for brain cancer research because I had lost 3 members of my family to brain cancer.
Unbelievable. Your sister, your niece Eva is one of those, isn't she? She was diagnosed at just 41 and passed away at 45.
Yeah.
Dennis, he was diagnosed at 48 and passed away at the age of 50. And your sister Mary as well. 50, I beg your pardon, your sister Mary diagnosed at 58 and died at 60. That's an awful cross for you to bear, Patsy.
It was a huge impact on the family, as you can imagine. Yeah. And because of the link between, like, my sister got it first and then my niece got it and then my cousin, my mother's side. And it was... We're still looking for the link.
Yeah.
We're looking, you know,
that leads us on to the research because when we talk of cancer, we know there's a myriad of cancers, very sadly. Very rarely do we talk of brain cancer. When we talk of conditions of the brain, it might be an aneurysm or, you know, a growth or what have you. It's very rare. And I'm not really sure if I have on this program. We've talked about an awful lot, spoken about brain cancer. Okay. So what do we know about the areas of, in terms of research? Sorry, Patsy.
There's, of all the cancers, it's one of the least researched. Now, I don't want anyone to think out there that if they've got brain cancer, that the final, you know, is death. And because it happened to
there
us.
There are 70 different brain cancers and they're going to affect people in different ways. Yeah.
And they all affect people in different ways. But unfortunately for our family, it wasn't positive. So I started looking at the research. There is very little research done compared to other cancers. Like, we're at screening in a lot of cancers. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like that in brain. At the minute, there's one piece of research being done in Cork University Hospital, which is the outcomes after the operation, how they can be changed and improved. But apart from that, there's very, very little research.
Yeah, and so, hopefully the loads of money raised that will go towards in that regard. Yeah,
in that regard. And it might improve the outcomes for people. And they're always, like, the government is not funding greatly. In the UK, less than 1% of their funding for research goes to brain cancer. So I'm sure ours are the same. It's very hard to find a figure, an accurate figure on what is actually being spent.
Yeah.
But there's just two charities, and it's not something that our family is into fundraising.
Everyone's different. I get exactly what you're saying.
We have to do something positive because we've had such tragedy. We have to do something positive.
Yeah. And you know what, too? As well as it being a great day in raising funds, we're talking about brain cancer. Okay.
Yes.
And also we're remembering Eva, Dennis and Mary.
Yeah.
So there's a few prongs to this, isn't there?
There's a few prongs to it, and it's all positive, and we have to take as much positivity out of it as possible.
Exactly. We have to in life, don't we?
And the group are fantastic. They're amazing at what they do. The knitting group and their crafts are just amazing. So it's worth people's while coming along and buying. It might be gifts for Christmas or whatever, but they're absolutely
and they're all
amazing.
Unique, presumably. All the stuff is
all unique. All unique. Exactly. They're all handmade, so they're never going to be repeated. And there's huge amount of crafts there for people to buy.
I'm looking around me here and I don't see any with you.
Oh, we'll bring them on the 16th. Actually, you could come and visit us on the 16th of November in Leifs and purchase some of those crafts.
I've never been that purchase.
Sorry, did I mention purchase? We will donate them to you.
You will not, Leah. You will not. Margaret, tell us your role in all of this and what you want to talk about.
Thank you, Greg, for the opportunity. My role, just to go back a little bit, I'm the homeschool liaison coordinator, homeschool community liaison coordinator in Errigal College. Previous to that, I worked as a music teacher for almost 20 years in the school. So, as a homeschool community liaison, my remit is working with parents in the school. And it's a lovely job and a very privileged position. And key to working with the parents is to empower and enrich and engage parents with community activities and with school activities. And luckily enough for me, last year I had the great privilege of walking in the door at Leifs with three of my parents, Joanne and Maria and Alina. And we walked in the door to Leifs. I don't know if you've ever been there, Greg.
No,
but
I haven't.
It's the really and truly the most warmest, welcoming environment. And there's a buzz of activity. Like, they're working so hard for all the community. And it's just a gorgeous place to be. And we were invited to take part in the knitting group. Now, I'm not a knitter. And I've been working really, really hard trying to learn. And I'm not making great progress. I meant to bring in the work I've been doing so far, not impressive.
Might not be the best way to sell this event if you bring in your...
But the good news is... the good news is I'm not donating anything. So, but the parents...
But you donate your enthusiasm, your support and
absolutely.
Your time.
And the parents, along with the knitting group that's been well established, as Patsy said, for the last 5 years, our parents in Errigal College have just taken to... And they love going down on a Thursday from approximately 11 to 12, slightly after 12.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit... We knit, we sort out all the problems of the world.
What does LIFE stand for, LYFS?
Less Kenny Youth and Family Service.
Okay, simple as that.
But we've changed now to Local Youth and Family Service because our remit used to be in Letterkenny, but now we're all over the county.
Love it. Brilliant.
It is quite similar to a resource centre, but we're not a resource centre.
Mm-hmm.
We work a lot. We find our work now is lots of families having difficulties with housing and all the problems
supporting
of the day.
Supporting people with all the problems that we know.
You were speaking about neurodiversity the other day. We do a lot of programs with neurodiversity.
Oh, that's right. It was a gentleman, I think it was that texted in. Yous have, is it that event that's on Thursdays is hosted at Life's, is it?
No, we do the parent programs.
Right, okay. I beg your pardon. My mistake.
And one of the parent
But it's programs, good to see there's multiple things then happening in that area as well. Yeah, okay. Brilliant stuff.
And actually, again, with regard to the Parents Plus program, we're linked into that as well in Errigal College through the homeschool. So,
Patsy, do you remember she said she didn't want to do much speaking? And,
and then
do
you remember?
Those she's good. Oh, stop it. Hey, come here. It's going to be a nice. It's going to be a nice morning.
Nice
the craft one. Sale. That's the knitted goods.
Yeah.
All original. All for a great cause. And do you know what? Sometimes, what do you get someone for Christmas or a present? That you feel they have everything, right? You can say
like
this
most
is...
most people now have everything.
Yeah, so you can say this. This is handmade for you, by the way. And by proxy, you've donated to brain cancer research.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a win-win.
You know, it is a win-win because it's
coffee,
thoughtful.
Coffee there as well, and some of the ladies might donate
some buns.
Cakes.
Are you making a cake at least, Margaret? We're not taking any hats or scarves.
Dear, I'm going to do everything. I've decided now I'm going to cook buns. No, not cook, bake buns. Bake buns for the day. How's that?
And pampering and makeup too.
Makeup too, yes. Mm. We have lots of volunteers. We have some volunteers from the school who are going to do the makeup.
Yeah.
And we did have a previous pampering morning, which was hugely successful.
Good. Yeah.
So we have another one and you can come make a donation for the pampering. And most people get their makeup done and it's as good as... you've come
of course,
out of
that. Yeah, straight out of the
And if you don't mind, Greg, I just would
of
like
course,
to mention the teacher
Margaret.
In Errigal College that's going to bring the students, Sarah Quigg is her name, and she has a lovely little makeup club at lunchtime on a Monday and a Tuesday.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's fantastic. We have a lot of clubs during the lunchtime
in the
school.
Yeah.
But the makeup club's really a successful little club, and she has lots of students coming, but she has three in particular that are going to go and do pampering. So one is Eva Muller, Matilda Cassilly, and Adelina Darry.
Brilliant.
The 3 second
They
students.
Are the experts. Excellent. Brilliant stuff. Yeah. And also a raffle. So presumably, hopefully, you've had some prizes and stuff donated.
We have,
so thanks to the generosity of those people.
Quite a number of prizes donated and too many to mention because I definitely forget one and then I would. But we have plenty of prizes and there are hampers of makeup and there's hampers of from a butcher's and... All
sounds
sorts,
to me like
yeah.
it's a nice little way to treat yourself as well on a on a is it Thursday.
Thursday,
it is Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be a lovely thing, and I think it's for a great reason. It's great to remember Eva, Dennis, and Mary, who very sadly passed away because of brain cancer. And this is a fundraiser to support research into brain cancer, because as we've said, even by British standards, 1% of funding is in this area, so we can only imagine even if it's 1% in this country, it's going to be a much lower figure. Right, okay, so Patsy, thank you so much for joining us. You still have fun? It sounds like it's going to be fun.
Absolutely, it's fantastic.
Of course. Everything that happens in life is fun.
Good, that's exactly
actually,
what it should
be. Actually, we have a community bus, you know, in life, and Gary Glennon has it. Now, up until recently, it was a kind of a banger. Is it okay to say that?
Yeah,
it was an old
bus.
It was an old bus. And he very kindly gave it to me and I brought parents to Ards and to Rathmullen and I brought students last year to the zoo in Belfast.
You did?
I did, because I have got a driver's licence.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So lives have been such...
You don't even
You don't want to
hear.
Know. Don't much more. But lives have been such a great support to us. Like,
right,
and our kind of motto is to bring the school out to the community and bring the community into the school.
Lovely
and
stuff.
And honestly, the relationship we have is powerful.
Brilliant. Sounds
and,
great.
And just on that note of the community is always welcome in lives and we'll do our very best for people that come in through that door.
Yeah. All right.
And
even just to have someone to listen. Not everything can be fixed, but literally just to say you get
and
it.
And sometimes listening is the most important thing.
It really is, especially if you feel trapped in the situation they're in, because we all feel a bit like that sometimes. Yeah. Life's, by the way, is number one, New Line Road. The number is 074-9123078. And I think you can get a sense that it sounds like a wonderful thing to be a part of. We want to thank Patsy Ferry of the Dedicated Youth and Family Services, local Youth and Family Services. Mm-hmm. And also Margaret, who is the connect between the Youth and Family Services and the college, Arrogle College. It's been lovely having the two of you in. It's lifted my spirits for today. Just want to mention before we go that Imagine Broadband is connecting homes and businesses in Donegal to their high-speed broadband network every day. And for this week only, they're giving one lucky listener the chance to win €1,000 in cash. For your chance to win, simply head to imagine.ie/radio and run a coverage check to see if you can get their high-speed broadband. Terms and conditions do apply. The competition ends on Friday the 10th of November and we'll announce the winner on Jive Time on Monday the 13th of November. So all you have to do to be in with a chance to win €1,000 is go to imagine.ie/radio, check if you can get coverage with Imagine, follow the instructions there, and you're literally, as simple as that, in the hat to win a grand. Okay, back tomorrow morning with Friday's show. We've a cracking Friday panel to discuss all the big stories of the week and what might break overnight and emerge tomorrow. But that's it for today, Thursday. For me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, and Shannon working on the show, have a lovely Thursday.